15 years ago, my uncle died from cancer. It had been his second bout. About 40 years earlier, he had beat the odds to survive Hodgkin's lymphoma. As we gathered in the family room at the mortuary just before the funeral, my grandmother, his mother, said something I will never forget. Through her tears, she said, "God has been good to me. God gave me 40 extra years with Marty." I couldn't believe it. Here she was in her 80s, bearing her second and last child, and she was commenting that God had been good to her. The truth is, she had every right to be angry with God. Her daughter had died many years earlier as a young woman. Her husband had also died young. And now her son, with whom she was very close, had died in his 60s. I couldn't begin to imagine her pain. Yet as she sat there with tears in her eyes, she had the strength to believe that God had been good to her. As her granddaughter and as a newly minted rabbi, I was in awe of her ability to recognize and articulate her gratitude amidst her grief. We all know that an excess of money does not buy an excess of happiness. Sure, there's a level at which money can provide stability and the opportunity to pursue happiness, but having money does not inherently make us happy. But gratitude can, and gratitude is free. In fact, study after study shows us that people who report the highest satisfaction in their own lives and the highest level of happiness are those who also report being the most grateful. Too often, we focus on the annoyances of life. We focus on what we lack, the hassles of everyday living that take up way too much space in our mind and cloud out the wonderful things we experience. Think about the last time someone asked how your day was. Do you answer, "It was pretty good. I was mostly productive except for a couple of annoying things"? Or do we focus on the interruptions and those small annoyances with an answer like, "You wouldn't believe what happened"? And then we tell of the one or two moments that somebody either screwed up or negatively impacted us. As a hospice rabbi for 6 years, I worked with countless families as they were preparing to say goodbye to their loved ones. Often, when I told people what I did for work, they expressed how sad they thought my job must be. But to many people's surprise, I actually found my work to be quite the opposite. You see, as a hospice rabbi, I would come into the families' lives once they had already learned that they themselves or their loved ones were terminal. I was not the one that had to deliver the devastating news. I was the one that had the holy task of helping them make sense of it. Whether I was working with the patient themselves or with their family members, my job, my holy job, was to help identify the meaning they had had in their lives. When faced with the end of life, we are much more apt to let go of our struggles and to focus on the important and beautiful parts of our life. This doesn't mean ignoring the true sadness or hardships we faced, but choosing to focus on the meaning and the beauty. In Everyday Holiness, Alan Moranis writes about gratitude. When you open yourself to experience the trait of gratitude, you discover with clarity and accuracy how much good there is in your life. Whatever you are lacking, you will still be missing. And of course, in reaching for gratitude, no one is saying you ought to put on rose-colored glasses to obscure the shortcomings. The Hebrew term for gratitude is hakarat hatov, which means literally recognizing the good. The good is already there. Practicing gratitude means being fully aware of the good that is already yours. If you've lost your job but you have your family and health, you have something to be grateful for. If you can't move around except in a wheelchair, but your mind is as sharp as ever, you have something to be grateful for. If you've broken a string on your violin and you still have three more, you have something to be grateful for. What Alan Moranis is teaching is that we have a choice. We have a choice whether to focus on what we lack or the blessings that are present in our lives. In that moment, 15 years ago, my grandmother chose to focus on the extra 40 years my uncle had after beating his first bout of cancer, rather than all the years he would miss by his untimely death. As we reach the end of every funeral, we say the Kaddish. I often explain to the mourners present that this is a prayer of gratitude and exaltation. At a time when we want to look to the heavens and say, how could you, or why, we are instead instructed to look to the heavens and say, thank you. Thank you for putting this person into my life. Why do we take time to thank God when our instincts might be to curse God? Because ultimately, our sadness is the result of the beauty that that person brought into our lives. If that person had been insignificant in our lives, then our feelings of loss would be insignificant. Only because that person was meaningful to us do we mourn their absence. And so we thank God for creating the person and putting them into our lives, because whether they were in our lives for many years or far too few, their presence enriched our lives. So while there is sadness in their passing, there is also gratitude in their living. This week, we will read the penultimate portion of the Torah, Ha'azinu. In it, Moses is giving his farewell sermon before he is to go up to Mount Nebo, look out across the land of Israel that he himself will never enter, and die. In his farewell song, he reminds us of both the blessings and the curses that God is capable of. Moses cautions us to continue to follow God's rules or face the repercussions. But Moses also reassures us that no matter what happens, in the end, God will forgive us and bring us home. Life is a mix of blessings and curses. As we begin this new year, may we open ourselves up to finding and experiencing the gratitude that is in our lives, rather than focusing on the negative. Shana Tova and Shabbat Shalom.